I wish Rayburn was still around. I never had a chance to meet him, but flying his airplane, he was obviously a craftsman. He did a very nice job of building an airplane. So that's a historic airplane. This airplane was built by Canadian Car and Foundry in 1942. The Canadians built, I think, about 470 of the... How many Hurricanes did you say were built? 14,000?
14,000 and some.
Yeah, so the Canadians built, you know, 470 or 500. And then this airplane was on coastal patrol in Newfoundland when it was put into the swamp due to an engine failure.
Well, how many Hurricanes do you think are still flying? Ray, you know that, wouldn't you?
I think this is the 13th.
Are there any more
it's
being
restored?
It's either
the 13th or the 14th. I'm not 100% sure, but it's about that number.
Is any more being restored that you know of?
I know of two more that are being restored.
That's good. Okay. All right, well, now let's talk about the paint job on this and L.C. Wade.
Me again?
Whoever.
You want to go on this?
Well, let me just make a point about mentioning L.C. Wade as a pilot who this paint job is reflecting. Getting back to this idea of why we're even doing this is that the planes are one thing, but I think the thing that's even more important are the guys that flew these. And again, it's like all you guys that had fathers and grandparents and stuff that were involved in this stuff, their stories are what bring these planes alive. And that's what we really want, like focusing on at DTAM. And the L.C. Wade story with this plane is phenomenal, as Warren will go on to tell.
Well, you can do it. I mean,
No.
Wildcat Wade. Chuck Gravens is sitting here along with Ray and Bernie, and Chuck has done a tremendous amount of research on these airplanes and put together some really good stuff. When the airplane was originally restored, it was with a Texas museum, and they decided to use the L.C. Wade paint scheme and story because of this tremendous story of him. They called him Wildcat Wade. He was L.C. Wade. He never was given any Christian names, but he enlisted in the RAF before he enlisted in June of 41.
You mentioned that he's an American.
Yes, he was from Texas, and he was a mule skinner from Texas, and he went out, he bought his own airplane, he learned how to fly, he built time in it so he would qualify. He went to San Francisco and enlisted and was scurried off over to England, where he finished his training for flying these, and he ended up going to Malta and North Africa. This airplane is painted in the scheme of the airplane he was flying in North Africa. He went into action in September of 41, and by December 5th of 41, 2 days before Pearl Harbor, he had shot down 5 airplanes. But on the 5th airplane, he was damaged from debris, and he had to put the airplane in the desert. His co-pilot landed his wingman landed his airplane alongside him in the desert to try to get him out of there, but broke his airplane in the process. So the two of them walked back, and on December 7th got back to their base, entering the late arrival club. Yeah. on the day that he got back from walking out of the desert after becoming an ace, America joined the war with Pearl Harbor.
Well, that took him a couple of, 2 days to get out? 25 miles or something?
Yep, exactly.
In the North African desert?
Yeah.
How did they survive?
They located where they were, and they dropped supplies to them to keep them alive for the walk back.
Yeah, because she wouldn't be able to survive, yeah.
They did pick them up the next day. And they located and dropped supplies, and then they still had to sneak through German camps at night.
Yeah.
And then they picked him up with, one of the twin utility airplanes.
Well, and at that time, things are really hot for them because the war in North Africa at the time, it was a back-and-forth battle. In fact, from September of 41 to October of 42, they had to move their base backwards and forwards something like 18 times. And so they were really hopping. It was hot. Yeah.
Before we go any further, tell us the story about L.C. Wade and why he was ignored all these years.
Well, I think ignored is a little strong, maybe forgotten.
Not recognized.
He's an ace without a country, right, Chuck? Yeah. Isn't that?
That's pretty much it. And I think it has a little bit to do with how he died. You know, it was an accident, and that doesn't make great press for war propaganda. So They actually did some cover-up. I can get into that later. But, and he wasn't an American, so the Americans weren't, you know, producing. But he had 23 kills for certain when he died, and possibly 25. Well, 25 would put him 10th on the all-time aces list of American aces, and 23, I think, would tie him with 14th, you know. But, yeah, at least in that neighborhood. And not too many people know him. If you say L.C. Wade, who, you know?
Yeah.
And he was the highest-scoring American ace in a foreign service, right?
Well, not only that, he was the highest-scoring ace in the Mediterranean and Desert Theater when he died in the RAF.
Well, and the other interesting thing about it is, too, which probably contributed to it, is that when the Eagle Squadron were started, he considered joining an Eagle Squadron, but ultimately decided, I've been fighting with my mates in the RAF, I'm sticking with that. So he was with the RAF till his demise.
When was he killed?
He was killed in Italy.
When?
One of the Foggia complex bases, I think, I don't remember, it was number 7 or whatever, but he had, by the time, this was January of 44, he was promoted to, he was a wing commander by that time. And so he had kind of just finished being in combat. And in combat, he flew Mark 9s like this, and, you know, fresh ones, combat ready. Visiting other bases, he got a squadron hack, and it was a Spitfire 5. And he went and had lunch and visited with, there was an American squadron on a base and some of his mates from combat. And he took off and made a pass and did a roll, and unfortunately, he was a little low, and I don't know if it was because, you know, the airplane was tired or whatever, but he caught a wingtip, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, and he had such a remarkable life. There really ought to be a movie about him, except that the ending is kind of bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chuck was mentioning that in some of his research, within 2 days of getting into Europe, he was already squiring an earl's daughter, and he ended up dating some showgirls and USO showgirls over in Egypt that were there entertaining. And yeah, there's some amazing stuff on the website and in the pictures.
He was quite a guy. When he the way he joined was a little different. It was interesting to listen to the vicar talk about Americans before 1940. Really, it wasn't legal for them to join the RCAF or RAF because America was officially neutral. And you have to think about 1940. 1940 was an election year. And so isolationism was kind of the public sentiment, you know, non-intervention, stay out of the war. And I think the people in power knew that wasn't going to happen, but that's what they campaigned on. And so in November of 40, the election was held and it was over. Late November 1940, FDR gave the Canadians permission, and they created a commission called the Clayton Knight Commission, and it was primarily Billy Bishop, the World War I leading Canadian ace, and this Clayton Knight, who was kind of the money. And they set up recruitment stations or offices in luxury hotels like the Waldorf Astoria in New York, and then some in Kansas City and one in San Francisco. And most accounts you'll hear about L.C. Wade will say that he went to Canada and joined the RAF, and he didn't. His family has been just wonderfully cooperative and provided all of his logbooks scanned to me, his diaries, postcards. Anyway, long story short, in his logbook on December 12th, he flew his little Welch airplane, which is really an unusual airplane.
With a 40-horsepower Continental.
Yeah, he had 9 hours in a Ronca Chief, and then he had another maybe, I think he had 75 hours when he got done, and that was all in this Welch, which looks like an Aranca C-3. And then he goes to San Francisco on the 18th, and he flies a 200-horse Waco for 5 hours, and I'm going, that just didn't make sense to me. Well, eventually, the historian of 33 Squadron, we made contact, and he provided his official RAF personnel record. And on the 18th of December, when he flew that Waco, that's his enlistment date. And then they flew him to Spartan College in Tulsa, where they were conducting what they called refresher courses. And it pretty much amounted to what we would call basic and advanced training, because they were flying the civilian equivalent of PT-19s and then T-6s and Spartan executives, of all things. Then he went to Canada. Then he went over, and as Warren said, if you think about him, the words that come to my mind are dashing and debonair, you know, because the man
he
looks
called
like
him a rake.
He wasn't a scoundrel or anything like that. He was a very honorable man, but he looked like Cary Grant. And if you look like Cary
more like
Grant,
Clark Gable
or Clark Gable, man. Clark Gable, yeah, thank you, Bruce. Because you know, in 1940, if you look like Clark Gable, you're probably going to get a date.
So, especially if you fly airplanes.
Yeah. So he was as Warren said, he was squaring around a daughter of an earl by the time he was in England for a couple of days, and he went to their estate and all of that. And when he was in Egypt, he met these sisters, the de Perhatch sisters, and they were showgirls and radio personalities who he intended to marry one of the sisters, and of course he died. And so anyway, his family, he had no kids because he died so young. His family's been really cooperative, and that's his niece or his nephew and you know, his niece by marriage. I can't say enough for her. Yeah. It always amazes me what they're willing to provide to somebody that they don't even know. Yeah. So we wanted to get him here, but they are watching, and I hope they enjoy
they made you an honorary family member here recently, yeah. Didn't they?